This program is brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you hear, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And I'm William English, and today's guest is David Lester. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon, William.
And we should describe our circumstances, perhaps.
Yeah.
It's July, the 22nd or something?
Yeah, I don't know, somewhere. It's just, days do not make any sense anymore.
21st, I think it is. I think it's Tuesday, July the 21st.
But does it really matter? It's somewhere in July.
Exactly. And we've decided to, this is the first time we've met for several months, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
And so we're actually in a shop, a bookshop, near 50 yards away from Tate Modern, and I've locked the door. We're locked into the shop, so there's just you and me and somebody in the background plucking away on our computer.
So I am sort of, in a way, hostage to this program.
Sort of, but we've decided that we should do it in this way, because it sort of suits both of us to be in this environment.
Because I haven't been out much. This is actually the furthest away I've been from my place or my little flat in Camberwell since March, really.
Right.
So this is, if you draw a little circle, I think I did one trip, terrifying trip, across the river about 3 weeks ago. And since then, this is about the furthest away I've been from my comfort of my own.
So you have literally been locked in for 3 months?
Yeah, since March, yeah.
So how was that?
It's sort of, you're sort of defined by what you do, and since I haven't been doing much, there has been sort of a loss of identity in a way. I work with artists in galleries, I make my own film, and it took me, you think, I've got all this time, I'm just going to crank the camera up and do some work immediately, I've got all this time, but no, it wasn't like that at all. I was very disorientated for a long time, and was just not able to do very much.
Right.
I thought, great, I'll clean the place up. I'll clean the house up. It's actually worse now, probably, than when it started. There's just stuff kind of. I started sorting things, and then I kind of lose interest, enthusiasm, direction. Piles of paper keep going up.
Right.
Shredding old bits of paperwork, and then finding bits of paperwork, and then they kind of jog a memory or trigger a memory or something, and then I dwell on that, and then I think they say you kind of think of things in the past a lot, and think of old friends, and you get in touch with people you haven't been in touch with a while, and I'm getting in touch with old thoughts and memories I haven't been in touch with for a while, just by the simple fact of stumbling across a bit of paper, a bit of a tape, or a piece of work. But you may realize this, William, I am a bit of a hoarder.
Indeed, yes.
So I think my mother was a collector, my father was a hoarder.
Yeah.
And they sort of canceled one canceled the other out with my sister. She was completely minimalist, whereas I got the double dosed. I collect and hoard all at the same time.
Yeah. Right. We should say that you have a large collection of mostly 16mm film.
Yeah, mainly 16mm.
Which you projected as part of your keynote club going back decades.
Decades. Long time now.
Yeah. In your own idiosyncratic way. As a sort of club which projected 16mm film, and you manipulate the sound and you act like a sort of compere, don't you?
Yeah. Manipulate sound and the image, and we had live musicians improvising.
Right.
To the films as they were presented on the screen. Sometimes they were presented as they came directly out of the can. Other times, the line was that I had so many films in my collection I'd never see them in one lifetime, so I had to watch three at a time, all at the same time, one on top of the other.
Right.
And then when the musicians would try and make some sense of that.
Yeah. And you are, of course, one of the, if not the only, no, not the only, but you're a what shall I call you? In terms of projection, you are a leading projectionist. You're the go-to guy for 16mm projection. You do things at the Tate Gallery, all sorts of galleries.
I work with a lot of lens, analog film, 60mm based artists, helping them present their work in a gallery setting,
right?
For continuous exhibition, which wasn't done years ago. Films were, as you know, were just screened for one night or at a festival or something, and film being installed in galleries is still relatively new. There's no way to continually project them.
Right.
Looping systems have been around for a while, and I made a accessible, user-friendly one based on some combination of designs that I've seen, to make a platter system, basic platter system that allowed you to continue to project the film. Yeah. So I was doing that.
You did a show on Resonance called the Optical...
Optical Sound Show.
Optical Sound Show.
Show, yeah. Okay. Which is, the line was, I was showing films on the radio.
Right.
And, you know, what could be more ridiculous?
Yeah.
But it's like films in the dark.
Yeah.
It's like showing films without the lamp on, without the bulbs gone on the projector. What are we going to do? Well, let's do the show anyway and just listen to the films.
Right.
And in the end, when I was going through the archive for the Optical Sound Show, I would pick films out, you know, looking for thinking, oh, what would have a good track on or interesting narration or something. Mm. And in the end, I wasn't even turning the lamp on my projector. I was just listening to them and playing them blind.
Right.
You know, I wasn't concerned with the picture, you see, because I was recording only the sound.
Right.
That's what I was going to share with on the radio.
Yeah.
So why would I want to see the picture? It could be distracting.
Yeah.
That was a theory anyway. But I did record a lot of stuff without actually looking at the picture sometimes when I was going through stuff, just to see if it would work. You know, because you have to conjure your own images when you're listening to radio. Yeah.
Petroleum oil to propylene and then to polypropylene, the source of Moplen, Meraclon, Meracrine and Moplifan. An entire range of products inspired by the discovery of a new polymer. A discovery which adds prestige to scientific research and industrial chemistry in Italy.
Listening to my Optical Sound Show, which was on air from 2006, so I thought...
That was on again last week.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's 2 weeks in a row.
So I'm still being...
It's followed Wavelength. Oh. It might follow Wavelength this week.
So tune in, listeners. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for the Optical Sound Show.
Show.
Going back to this lockdown thing, you have been locked down for at least 3 months in your own flat.
Yeah.
And you are... Probably, would you class yourself as being a vulnerable person?
Well, I suppose I'm not sure. I've had some serious health issues in the last couple of years.
Mm.
We won't go into detail.
Okay.
But
that might have made you more cautious.
Yeah,
than...
I do wonder a lot if I would be a bit more, I don't know, courageous is the wrong word, but adventurous is also the wrong word. I don't know, what is the right word?
Less
worried. Let's just say less worried. Less cautious.
But you've been more cautious, I
think. I've been more. But what I'm saying, I'm sorry, I'm approaching it from the other way. If I hadn't had anything occur, I may have had a different...
Would you have been Would you think so? Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, so no, I have been much more. That's what even coming here. I think. Now having been out, I was initially terrified to go to the shops even.
Right.
And
yes, I remember you did tell me on the phone that there was this, I mean, it's probably common to everybody, but you did that thing of zigzagging across the road if you saw someone coming.
Yeah, we'd walk up to the veg market, and then if anybody was coming down the road towards us, I'd say, let's cross over. So we cross over the road, and then if somebody be on that side, then we cross over. And if somebody met, it took us twice as long to get anywhere because we just covered so much more ground just trying to whatever.
But, yeah, and as a result of that, you nearly stepped in front of a car.
Oh yeah, I was like looking at somebody trying to avoid them, and I just stepped right up in front of a car. Luckily, it was on a back street, and it was moving quite slowly.
So. Right.
But I just thought that car would have been a different. So
yeah,
you're just not used to navigating.
Yeah.
In the street, kind of unaware of one's surroundings.
Hi there. Uh-oh, this looks dangerous. Will they see that car? Think I better have a word with those two. That wasn't very clever, was it? If you'd been looking and listening all the way across, that wouldn't have happened. That's better. Remember, always use the green cross code, because I won't be there when you cross the road.
But yeah, the whole thing about, I suppose, being in that lockdown, the days, you lose sense of time, and it becomes like a Groundhog Day.
Right.
The film Groundhog Day, where the day repeats and and repeats.
Has it affected your, because I mean, you are self-employed, aren't you?
Oh yeah, I have no work.
You've had no work.
Everything, it just, as the went into lockdown, bam, 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 all the shows I was going to be involved got cancelled, so I have, I don't have any, I have no income.
Right.
At the moment.
And is there any light at the end of that tunnel?
Well, I'm getting a few nibbles, but we don't know what's going to happen with the gallery scene. You said the Tate is opening up, a few galleries are opening up by appointment, so maybe, but a lot of major shows that I was going to be involved with certain artists are just not happening. Sort of going back to my artifact, which I might have here. I mean, while trying to sort out my possessions, I talking about how much of a hoarder I am. Years ago, everyone had like an answer machine on their telephone.
Yeah.
Sometimes a cassette tape. I had and then you progressed to micro cassettes.
Yeah.
I had a micro cassette machine thing, and you'd come home, instead of checking your email, you would see how many times the little light was blinking on your answer machine, and that's how many,
I remember
I suppose, messages you had in your inbox. But your inbox was on a piece of tape then,
because
you didn't have email to check.
Yeah.
And I remember how many people excitedly rush in and see how many flashes you had. And if you hopefully you just didn't have one, that you had numerous flashes, and that's how many people wanted to talk to you.
Yes.
Or leave you a message.
Yeah.
So, and of course, me being me, I saved all these tapes. So I have a drawer full of micro cassettes of these people ringing me up, calling me up.
Going messages. Back to when are we, what's the, just the initial?
Early 90s, in the 90s.
Early 90s?
Yeah.
Right.
So I've been looking at these tapes and thinking for years, thinking I must do a piece of work, but I thought probably the messages are not that interesting. Yeah. But I think the main thing that all these tapes have in common is everybody on the tape says, "Hello, David."
Right.
So I think I am going to do a piece
of work.
Did
you have a custom answer? In other words, had you, with those things that just used to say, some of them would just have like a BT reply.
No, I had, I was able to record the outgoing, and...
Yeah. Did that remain constant throughout the year?
No, that changed, but that's a good point, because I don't know where that tape is.
That's a separate tape?
Yeah, it was a separate tape.
So the piece of machinery would have two tapes, one which played your message, your voice, saying what would it say?
Well, I would just say, "Hi, David here. I'm not in at the moment. Please leave a message after the tone, leaving your where I can get a hold of your phone number or something."
And then the machine would automatically transfer to the other tape.
Well, then click that one would stop.
Yeah.
And then it would record from the beep. I have the actual message, the Panasonic answer machine, and I do have it in a box somewhere, but right. Where that box is, I don't know.
Were there any significant voices there? That would, I mean, you know, big name filmmakers or something? Is there something kind of... Well, I mean, they're all significant, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some, you might have suddenly got to a point you thought, oh my God, yes, there's a message from Stan Brakhage calling for...
No, I don't think Stan, ever rang me back then. John Smith is on there.
Okay.
Yeah. But he doesn't... But annoyingly, he doesn't say, hello, David. He says... he just goes, Mr. Lester, how he starts out. And I was like, well, so he might not make the final cut, unfortunately.
Okay.
You know, I just, right. It has to, I don't know if I want my surname
yeah.
in there. So.
Yeah.
But very, very you know, entertaining method. Okay. I actually brought...
what have you got?
I've got a little micro cassette player here where I'm going through stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe we could listen to a couple of...
A couple of
messages
you
here.
Don't need to get too
but
close.
What I'm kind of getting very good at, I'm not actually listening to the messages. All I'm interested in is the hello, David
right.
bit. So let's see what okay. we got here. So I can always fine tune this later.
Hi, Dave. This is.
Hi, David.
Hello, David.
Hello, good evening, David.
Hi, Dave. Hello, this is John Smith ringing for David.
Well, hello, David. Hi, David. Hello, David.
Hi, David. It's Tom.
Hello, David. It's... Hi, David.
Hello, David. It's...
Hi, David. Hi, David.
Hi.
Oh, David.
If you give me a call, David, that'd be great.
David, it's 4:30 on...
Hi, David. Hi, David, it's...
Hello, David.
Hi, David. Harry Hill.
That's one of my favorites. That
what is that one where nobody, they didn't actually
yeah,
get the message,
yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
hung up or something.
But that's,
sure.
But that kind of gives you an example of where it is. So I'm kind of just zooming through the messages.
Yeah.
But I'm actually getting quite good at actually just getting to the Hello David bit. That's all I'm interested in, in hearing my name spoken. No, not really. But some messages are really banal. They're all pretty
say,
much.
I was going to say they're probably not that interesting.
No, no. But the strange thing about the messages, you know, there's some messages from people who I am still speaking with, like this last week. I listened to a couple of three messages on the tapes from the early 90s, and I'd actually spoken to three of those people
okay.
that same
By
week.
By coincidence.
So, Well, just I think it shows you how you stay in touch with certain people, still
right.
dealing with it. It's people who've just been in my life that
yeah.
whole time.
Okay.
But just going back to the answer machine tapes, a friend of mine from years ago invited me around for dinner on this tape.
Oh.
For a moment, I thought I was going to be going for dinner on Sunday.
right.
You see,
okay.
even though the dinner invite was 20 years old,
ah.
I was
yeah.
going to turn up the next Sunday.
Wow.
Just, you know, for that, not,
so
I wouldn't
that,
really do that. But
is,
it
that
just,
a, is that the result of the disorientation? Of
I think
the,
a little bit, but I think it was just, it was such a warm invite.
Yeah.
I just felt like...
So it,
oh,
felt,
yeah.
it felt like it was in the present time?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even
yeah,
though it was,
yeah.
what, 20 years ago?
Yeah. So right. it was very strange, and it kind of right. took me to... But I think, yeah, maybe it has to do with disorientation. Maybe it just has to do with my brain in general.
Okay.
But I did feel like I was kind of... Almost in the present
some
day.
Some
yeah.
strange space sort of.
Yeah, I was space-time continuum. That this
vanished.
Tape.
But that is interesting, isn't it? About that it, what we call that tense alignment or something. It's like a sort of, which is the case with film as well, isn't it? Film
mm-hmm.
and sound,
mm-hmm.
which, when you're looking at it, or listening to it, it does exist in the present. I mean, it is that is a present time trace. Don't sort of deal with that really. It presents itself as being in the present, even though it's something, even though it's something that's from long ago.
Yeah, so that's kind of why I'm not quite sure. I mean, after, when I listen to the tapes, it takes me back to that time. You know, how many years ago? Well, over 20 years ago, really. If I do the maths, what year are we in? So so it was the 90s. Yeah,
well,
probably
30
years ago, really.
Ago,
Blimey, Gov.
Right,
that's a long time ago.
It is strange because obviously, I've got the seven tapes which I've been doing for I've got hundreds of Morris Sender, and strangely, the large bulk of his are from the '90s. I've got more from like 1990, 91 than any other period of time with him.
1991.
Yeah.
Specifically that year.
Well, for some reason he had a particular fixation, although a lot of the money got thrown away. But I've got the last hundred or so are all from 1990 to 91. But that was because he was sort of...
He must have been on the phone a lot.
He was indeed. Absolutely. Yeah, lived, hours. Worth.
But again, the difference with him, he recorded his conversations,
exactly.
Didn't he?
Yeah.
Mine,
yeah.
I don't think... Actually, no, there will be some... Now that you mention it, there will be some me having a conversation with somebody, because sometimes the machine was supposed to cut off when you picked it up.
Oh, right.
And a few times it carried on running.
Okay.
So,
they're accidental.
Yeah, there's an record. Accidental... Me with an accidental... Conversation, with somebody talking, having a conversation with somebody.
Well, playing these tapes from the 90s with Morris, after having done it for years and hundreds of these tapes, it's only recently that I've suddenly found myself there. I've come across brief conversations that I've had with Morris.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and, Hugh as well.
Oh, okay.
Those have sort of emerged recently, which was a bit of a shock. You thought, oh my God, that's me.
Well, I suspect you may be on my tapes.
Oh, somewhere. Am I on one of the Hello David?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I'm pretty sure you are on one. Did come across.
But you're not sure, which means that some of them are unidentified.
Oh no, they're all just thrown in a drawer. None of them are dated or anything.
Oh, okay.
So I have no idea when they're from or the date. I might be able to work it out.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't date them all.
Right.
But strangely, I picked one tape up. And then I looked at it, and it says on the thing, it says phone 94 to 10/7/96. And I thought, that's not my writing. and then I suddenly realized it's my mother's writing. And then I remembered, and I don't know when I picked this up, my mother had an answer machine for a while, same type, almost the same identical one. And I found a tape of her answer machine, and it's very strange. The first voice I heard on it was my younger brother, who obviously I'm still speaking with, years ago, trying to get hold of me 30 years ago when I was staying at my parents. I was there, so maybe
in
that's
Wisconsin.
Yeah, in Wisconsin.
Okay,
we're going back to Wisconsin.
Exactly.
Again.
Yeah.
So my brother is looking for me and left a message at my parents' house in September. I don't know when, in between those two dates. Maybe that's why I picked the tape up, because I realized I was on this tape. But it's just a really odd one that's in there. And also, my sister's on as well. My sister passed away recently.
Right.
So to hear her voice was a real shock as well.
Right.
Again, 30 years ago.
Do you think hearing somebody's voice is actually more poignant than a photograph?
It certainly has a different effect, because it's like, again, you cross time.
Photographs are much more common, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine what it would be like to hear my parents' voices on a tape. I think that would be such a shock.
Oh, so there is no recording?
I've got no recordings of my parents at all. I've got little bits of 8mm footage, but there's no silent.
Yeah.
But the idea of hearing my father's voice now would be quite, I find that quite disturbing.
I recorded my parents some years ago, but I'm not sure where that tape is. But hearing my sister's voice was a bit of a shock.
Right.
And because it was 30 years ago, her voice had changed over this time.
Oh, yeah.
and you know, my brother and my sister, they did sound a lot younger, because right. they were. Your yeah. voice changes as you get
yeah.
older.
Yeah, yeah.
But, a couple of things. I just want to play, and also about the speaking of the tapes, I found, the tape I found at my parents', which was my mother's tape. I do have that tape here. And I just want to play you. I thought this was quite amusing. Hopefully, it's in the right
Don't
spot.
Don't hold it too close. It'll send the sound level right over the top.
Friday, 3:11 p.m. Hello, Lorraine. This is Selena. I'm back. I heard that you want to have a perm, so you can come on Friday, regular time. I give you perm. Call me back later. I'm going to church now. Or call and leave me a message. Thank you. Bye-bye. It's good to be back. Bye-bye.
Who's that?
So that was my mother's hairdresser.
Oh, right.
Who is, I don't know if you could make it all out, but she's saying she heard, I don't know, maybe on the grapevine, that my mom wanted a perm, but she used to go around to, when my mother was old, she used to go around to the house and give my mother a perm.
Right.
Because,
right.
My mom always had her hair done regularly. I never knew it, you know, in the last, I don't know how many years, what my mother's hair really looked like, because it's always, as my father would say, her hair was always cranked up.
Okay, really? Okay.
So that's her hairdresser, but I've been on holiday. Right. It's good to be back, so she's going to come around, and after church, right. she's going to come around and do my mom's hair.
So how many of your mother's tapes have you got?
I don't know if I have any more. I just found this by accident.
Right.
So
and have you run through it?
Just briefly, there's somebody trying to sell her health insurance and a couple of other age-related messages.
Sunday, 8:22 p.m. Good morning. This is Evie Gallagher calling from Physicians Mutual. If you are interested in a brochure for long-term nursing coverage, I can be reached at 873-0526. Thank you kindly. Bye-bye.
Tuesday, 9:47 a.m.
Hi, this is Chris from Dr. Caterzoli's office. I'm calling to confirm David's appointment for tomorrow, Wednesday, September 4th at 11 o'clock. Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is the same tape that has my brother and my sister on it.
Right.
Leaving messages for me.
Oh, yeah.
And it was dated, the date is around September the 4th, I don't know, you know, in the early 90s, when I would go back and stay with my parents for a month in the summer. Because I was working at a university in London, so there's a school term. Yeah. Summers we are off, obviously, so I could take that time and go back to the States if I wanted. So yeah, I could have got a perm while I was there, really, if I would have hung around long enough.
Anyway, what's next on your agenda? You do you want to mention that very strange record that you had the reference to which I can no longer remember. Ginger Baker?
Oh, okay.
Or has that come later?
Yeah, no, okay.
But I can't remember why.
Let's see how we can segue into that seamlessly. Places closing, cinemas closing, things closing.
Yeah.
Obviously, pubs have closed, shops have closed, and, you know, slowly things are reopening. A lot of places have kind of, some pubs have become like pop-up shops. You walk into the pub now and you buy things over the, you know, in the entryway at a pub near us, you can buy small some provisions, posh provisions, as we call them. But now the shops are slowly reopening. Not all of them are opening, are they? Because there's a lot of places there's a place around the corner that just opened, obviously before the lockdown, and you know they must have just, you know, it's reopened to something else now. But some people have lost money on shops. Shops have been there for ages, didn't come back.
That's right. Well, literally just down the road here, Carluccio's is gone, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. So just down here next door to this shop is There's three restaurants, none of which have opened up yet. The Albion closed a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Carluccio's was one of the first to go bust.
Yeah, which is ironic because there's a big sign that says Carluccio's as you get off the train.
As you get off the Blackfriars Station, you see the sign of Carluccio's. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was one of the first to go.
Yeah, yeah.
That went very quickly. And in fact, in the Barbican, when we walk through the Barbican, up on the high walk in the Barbican, we noticed for the first time last week that there's two restaurant spaces where they've literally been stripped bare. All the furniture's gone. You know, like you said, you realise they're not opening again because all the fittings have been taken out.
Yeah.
One of which was a Jamie's restaurant,
and the
other one was a Pizza Express.
Okay.
And so both of those, and there's a wine bar up there, which is also all the furniture's gone.
Yeah.
So but they're kind of off the street level.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's by the way.
But. You know, that is like down in Camberwell and around Camberwell. I think it's sort of like, I mean, the shops are kind of sort of reopening, but there are certain ones that are missing.
Right.
I can't remember who said it's like when these shops are, some of them are opening and some are not. It's like missing teeth in the smile of the high street or something.
Oh, right.
So in a way, what always goes through my head when I see these empty shops, I don't know if you know the Cream album, Wheels of Fire.
Right.
There's a tune on there called Pressed Rat and a Warthog.
Yes, I was very surprised to hear you mention that track. It's a very obscure track to
remember.
Out of all the tracks, you see, I mean, people that remember that record, as I do, it's like White Room, Crossroads. What's the other really long one? Crossroads, White Room,
Politician.
Politician, is that on it? Yeah, but it was a Pressed Rat and Warthog. It's probably the least remembered track of that album because it's the only one that Ginger Baker's talking on it, isn't he?
Yeah, it's just in this and this very kind of like it's like a poem.
Yeah,
that does rhyme. That I got the words in my head wrong for years, but. But they closed down their shop.
Oh, is that it?
Okay. And Prestrat's collection of dog legs and feet or something. Yeah. You know, it's very surreal. You know, it's a surrealist poem.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
It went straight around the corner and never came back.
Right.
But I've every once in a while it pops into my head, but especially with the shops. And well, let's just listen to it, and you get the idea.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Press that button.
Yeah.
Pressed Rat and Warthog closed down their shop. They didn't want to. It was all they had got. Selling atonal apples, amplified heat, and Pressed Rat's collection of dog legs and feet. Sadly they left, telling no one goodbye. Pressed Rat wore red jodhpurs, a warthog in striped tie. Between them they carried a three-legged sack, went straight round a corner and never came back. Closed down their shop. The bad Captain Madman had told them to stop selling atonal apples, amplified heat, and Pressed Rat's collection of dog legs and feet. Bad Captain Madman had ordered their fate. He laughed and stumped off with a nautical gait. The gate turned into a derogatory, and his peg leg got woodwork, broke into three. Mm-hmm. depressed ratty warthog and closed down their shop. They didn't want to, which was all they had got. Selling atonal apples, amplified heat, a pressed rat's collection of dog legs and feet.
Very, very, very few tracks that Ginger Baker wrote, I think.
Yeah, I think. But
it's weird, isn't it? Because like with the Beatles, it's like they let Ringo Starr on occasion.
Yeah, it would always be
like the odd, odd track.
Yeah, but I think Cream always did. They always had like a throwaway track at the end of the album. Right. But this, I mean, this, I think this started one of the sides. It was a double album. They started one of the sides.
You could be right.
But they kind of segue into a classical tune at the end, and my mother kind of said, "Oh, that's Greensleeves," or something. I can't remember. I'm trying to think what the tune is.
I certainly don't remember that.
Yeah. No, they do a guitar riff into this kind of classical.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, which escapes me now. But anyhow, we'll.
Yeah.
Hello, David. It's David here. Just to let you know, you were close. But it's actually an English folk song called Green Bushes. Vaughan Williams used it in his 1923 English folk song suite, and Percy Grainger used it in the sixth movement of Lincolnshire Poesy, and he called it The Lost Lady Found. I just thought you'd find that of some interest, so there you go. Yeah, speak later. Bye.
So the relevance of that is that it's about a shop that's closed down.
Yeah. I suppose I kind of started thinking about that tune when recently, when our local bed shop, which had been there since the 60s, closed down. Uh-huh. And he did go straight around the corner and never came back.
The guy
who ran the shop for, you know, since 1963, he'd been there. And he only closed a year ago. Luckily, before all this happened, this would have finished the shop anyway. It has since reopened, but it's just a normal, it's just an ordinary kind of shop.
Something, one thing that did come to mind when it very quickly for me was that when this happened and all these cinemas closed, you obviously know about the was it Anthology Film Archives that used to have something designed by Peter Kubelka, didn't they? Wasn't it called the Invisible Cinema? There's photographs of it. You see these photographs of. I think it was dismantled a long time ago, but it's basically a cinema where people sit in little black cubicles, and they've got like a, you know, they're separated from the next person by a black painted wall. And
it sounds a bit like a peep show to me.
Sort of. But there's photographs of people like Andy Warhol and Kubelka and various people sitting in this thing called the Invisible Cinema. It's existed in New York for just a few years, and I think it all fell apart. But it would come into its own now.
And how were the films being presented?
Obviously the seats were raked.
Yeah.
Quite seriously. Mm-hmm. You then sat in a little booth where you had you were separated from the person next to you on either side by black. So basically, there were no distractions. All you could see was the screen. You'd be looking forwards, and so there's a photograph showing these people, and you can see the front of the person, but you wouldn't be able to see the back of the person. So if you can imagine just sitting in like a black wooden box, I don't think it had a lid on it. I think it was just on the sides, and the whole cinema. The idea was that you would only see the screen. You wouldn't see people to either side of you, and if you were sitting behind somebody, you wouldn't see anything. You'd only see the screen because it's black wood, you know. or something.
Sounds a great idea to bring back for social distancing.
Well, exactly. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I was thinking something that would be an ideal situation now for somebody to build. I mean, like close-up cinema.
Well, that's so small, though. I think you'd only get about 3 people in there if you did that.
Right. Okay. But that it would suit a space like that where you could seat about 50 people.
Well, the capacity in there is 40 anyway.
Right. I know, but how are they going to survive?
Well, all these smaller places. How is anywhere?
Yeah. Well, it's in the record books. The anthology film archives.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Invisible Cinema.
Send me the link.
I'm pretty sure that Peter Kubelka designed it.
Okay.
It might have been him and me, because I.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if I mentioned it now, but you have a garden where you live.
Yes, I am very fortunate. Mm. We're very fortunate to have a garden at the back, which I've been spending countless hours in.
Right.
Rebuilding the deck at the back, the mythical deck, which was a deck that did exist for a while, but it rotted, and then I went back. I cut the deck down to the nearest common denominator, as it were, the nearest closest bit of solid wood, so the deck shrank. And then I rebuilt the deck using all the old timber.
Right.
So it is like it looks like a floating raft in the back garden, slightly raised.
Uh-huh.
And it's sort of like the sun deck.
Right.
Out there now, and, you know, we have cocktails in the evening out there. But what I did find in the back garden was, and maybe you noticed it, I don't know if you noticed it as well, the amazing how much birdsong increased.
I was going to mention it to you.
And it was incredible how much birdsong.
Yeah. In the city, it was the same. We could not believe it. But it's already diminished, hasn't it?
No, totally. And what I really did notice a lot was the blackbirds.
Right. Yeah.
And in fact, we had a blackbird nest just immediately outside my rear door in the hedge.
Right.
They nest kind of low sometimes, and the blackbird was. We used to have breakfast with the blackbird.
Okay.
Yeah, it would be in there, and it was really. It was probably within less than 2 meters away.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know if it was social distancing from the blackbird or not. But it's very close, but it was behind a dense bit of hedge, so if you had to look around the corner and see it, we'd always check every morning to see it was there. Got off, got some food, would come back, and we're looking forward to seeing the chicks.
But is it the case with you that this has gone down recently?
Yeah, well, let me finish the blackbird story.
I thought this was the blackbird.
Yeah, it is, yeah. No, I'll come back to the thing going on.
Okay.
But, so I kind of was keeping watch on this nest, and... I must have looked at the clock, 6 o'clock in the morning once, I heard this cacophony of bird noise, and I thought, I was kind of half awake, half asleep, that was a dream, is it not? But what I realize now, that's when the cat got into the nest.
Oh no.
And killed the chicks.
Oh no.
So we went out in the morning, we couldn't see the blackbird, and it's not there, and then later, I saw the two little chicks on the ground underneath the nest, mauled and clawed, and teeth marks on them. So
this is a bit grim, I don't know.
I was heartbroken. I was really heartbroken. I felt like I'd really let the blackbird down.
Oh, right.
Because I was on watch, and I could have woke up. I could have maybe chased it. Maybe it would have been too late. I don't know.
Yeah.
So the blackbirds were around for a while.
Right.
And now they're gone. There were lots of them around, and they're calling.
But do you think, is it because of the traffic, you think? Because the traffic started up again?
Well, it could be that, but it also might have something to do with the peregrine falcons that have been nesting in the church steeple now.
Is that right?
Yeah, we have peregrine falcons now in the church steeple across the road.
Oh, right.
So I don't know if they chased the blackbirds away or the blackbirds are nervous.
The law of nature has kicked in. And
a friend who I've been in touch with over this time, my friend Joe, she said I should be honored when I told her about the blackbirds. She said I should feel honored that the blackbirds chose that spot next to. So I felt very, that's why I even felt like, it's quite lucky to have this nest for. But that's why I feel even worse that I let them down.
Right.
But
I suppose springtime is probably, maybe it's the best time of year for
And I think, I don't know, I have to check on the whole blackbird situation to see if they do nest in a certain area and then go off somewhere else. But we did listen to Paul McCartney's Blackbird a few times during
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the line of a dark black night.
But yeah, it's got different sort of sounds are appearing now, and I'm particularly annoyed by the reappearance of the ice cream van playing Yankee Doodle.
We've got the same one. We've got one playing Yankee Doodle as
Do you have the one playing the test match? What is it? Match of the Day?
No, but it's only we only get Yankee Doodle.
We get that one. We also get Match of the Day as well. But I just. We'll be talking in the garden, and it's so loud. We have to pause our conversation with the ice cream van.
I may try and record it,
just to share that with our listeners here. And then that's usually followed by a siren that goes past on that.
Right.
Those would be going by the whole time.
Yeah.
Then the helicopter goes by. Yeah. Lots of police helicopters.
Yes.
Then the aircraft has started again. The planes are flying more now. Mm. We're under a flight path.
Oh, are you?
So we hear it a lot. Yeah. So, but it's it's that ice cream van that I found most annoying.
Yeah.
That's repeated. So the So Yankee Doodle. Has replaced the blackbird sound.
What was the story? You mentioned something on the phone about a lens, a zoom lens or something. You were making a film.
You're making
a film in your back garden.
Well, I have sort of limited subject material. So my subject material these days is my deck. Really, that's my main character in my next film. Is the deck.
The deck.
Yeah, that I built.
Yeah. Sounds very abstract.
Yes, it is. Will be an abstract film, kind of along the lines of. Did you see my film Blinder? That was shot in my kitchen.
Venetian Blind.
Yeah. Which is kind of a lockdown film in a way.
I suppose it is.
Yeah. So maybe we should be.
Perhaps you were already withdrawing into your.
So, how the kitchen was arranged some years ago, that's what I would look at every morning, which is Venetian blind. And the Venetian blind was open at different levels, light would come in different ways, and I would look at the patterns on the wall. So in the end, it became a film.
Right.
And the soundtrack is quite, is an kind of an abstract sound generated by the frequency of the slats, how much light's coming through the slats.
Okay.
And that's how the sound is produced. In fact, I'll play a little bit.
Is the sound created by the image overlapping the optical soundtrack?
Yes, it, ultimately, I suppose it is. There are a few other things going on. Well, I'm not revealing all my tricks.
No, but it sounds a little bit like the Guy Sherwin film.
No, it is very much.
Where the train train lines go across.
And musical stairs.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And but it was primarily influenced by, that film was influenced by Liz Rhodes.
Light reading.
Light music.
Oh, is it?
It's confusing. There's light reading and light music.
Oh, there is light.
Light music is the film, the two-screen piece that actually was on a Tate some years ago, which is one of the jobs I was going to be doing in the near future, but it's been cancelled now.
Yeah.
I built a system to project these two films in sync. They, two films projected across the room through a slight haze.
Yeah.
And the sound on the film is, the picture is what makes the sound.
Okay.
So it's a homage. Blinder's a homage to that.
So in order to do that, you have to have two projectors which are somehow connected, so they're in perfect synchronicity.
For her piece, yes. Yeah. Mine's only a single one, and so is Guy's.
Right.
But, and it was on, at the BFI, my film was part of a program with the name that escapes me, and it was reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
By someone who, again, whose name is sketchy. Somebody just sent me the review, and the comment was more or less was, "Oh, you've heard one film like this, you've heard them all."
Ah,
you know, that was the gist of the of the critique, that they all sound alike. But as we kind of found extraordinary.
Well, I suppose there is something in that. They probably sound alike, but they would look when they're combined with the imagery.
Well, there was no discussion of the image in this whole review.
I mean, for the most part, it becomes a
It's like Sprocket. It's kind of like Sprocket. Sprocket.
Right.
But
so anyway, so this led you to, you were making a film in your off the decking.
Yes. So the decking will be maybe along the lines of Blinder. I'm not quite sure what's happening.
Okay.
Early days yet.
But there was something to do with the zoom lens, and
I got the zoom lens out of the cupboard, put it on the camera, and as in lockdown, so did the lens. The lens locked up in lockdown. It's frozen. I can't shift the zoom at all, and I just don't. I'd only just used it within the year, and I've had the lens for years, and it's I can't shift it. So I have to borrow a lens to. I'll carry on with the piece. It's a bit frustrating. So, but
what you got on there?
One thing I was cleaning up. I found my deluxe stylophone that I thought I'd lost, which is in
a deluxe xylophone.
Stylophone. Not xylophone.
Oh,
stylophone.
Is that where you have like a little?
Yeah,
pen,
the little the pen with wire attached to it. But this thing is huge.
You should have brought it in.
Yeah, this thing is huge.
Oh,
it's like it's got like two. It's got a double style. It's got a double keyboard on it, and all these different wah-wah effects, and all these different things you can do with it.
So, okay,
but it takes about like 20 batteries to power it up.
Really?
But it's massive. It's a really big thing. So
doesn't have a main sleeve then.
Well, I think it does have a converter. You can plug it, but I'm with my luck, I'd plug it in a transformer and just blow up. So right. I'm just going to load it up with batteries again and try it. So, but yeah, stylophones are kind of...
Well, you could play, you're welcome to improvise on the
yeah,
stylophone.
Yeah, well, I may actually play a tune.
Yeah,
I may play a tune or a composition.
Do you do requests?
Well, when I did the Kino Club, that used to be one of the running jokes. I would just say, I would get the deluxe stylophone out, and I would say, any request, and I had a friend in the audience who would always shout out, Spanish Eyes!
Okay.
Before anybody, because people would ask all sorts of stuff.
Oh, so
and I'd say, sorry, he was first.
Well, that's a bit like a magician's trick, isn't
yeah,
it? Having
yeah,
somebody
yeah,
in the
yeah,
audience.
Yeah, yeah.
That you
Spanish play. Eyes! Yeah. And it was the only, and
it
I
was
could
the only
play,
one you could play.
Well, that was in the instruction book. And that was the one, you. It's right. Very simple tune to play on
okay.
the xylophone. So
could you play Press Grattan Wartok?
Actually, I could. That's a really good, because it's a very mournful, you know, you could, yeah.
You could play along with it, perhaps. You could
yeah, well, I don't think I'd want to desecrate the tune. I may do my own
yeah.
version.
The stylophone came out in the 1960s, but I acquired it some 20 years later, still 30 years ago, and had a lot of fun with it. It has reappeared now, 50 or 60 years after it was originally launched. It was a very early synthesizer using transistors, which for the 60s was astonishing. You merely turn it on, it's a battery in the bass, you lift out the little stylus, and then you can start to play it, making black notes and all. That's a tune. Well, that's enough for today. But is it fun?
Right.
But I used to play one-note samba on it.
Ah,
that
yeah,
was,
yeah.
Yeah, that was easy. Yeah, so.
Hmm.
Hi, this is your mother calling to wish you a happy birthday. I hope that you get your messages before the 14th from wherever you are. Or we hear from you from wherever you are. Let us know wherever you are. Happy birthday. Bye.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you heard, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.